Well, good morning and welcome back to the Church Scattered Podcast. My name's Chris Bell. I'm here with my good friend and co-founder of Church Scattered, the network. He's the author of the new book, Church Scattered, that I hold in my hands right here. And just came out this week. We're really excited about it. Dan Greer. Dan, welcome to the podcast today.
Good morning, Chris.
We're a part of a four-person team, also with Noel Fenderson, entrepreneur and business leader in Memphis, Tennessee, and Blake Stanley, leadership speaker, executive pastor of Three Circle Church, and myself. I'm Chris Bell. I'm the lead pastor of Three Circle Church here on the Alabama Gulf Coast, and we are talking Church Scattered. If you heard or watched or viewed somehow the first podcast, we began to walk through this book that just dropped, Dan, called Church Scattered, that we are really excited about, and we're talking about disruption right out of the gate. We're talking about the fact that the church has to be both gathered and scattered, and for us to be effective in the 21st century, which is the context in which we're living our Christianity out, we have to make some changes, and the church is going to have to begin to focus on being scattered just as much as we do gathered. In fact, we have to focus more on the scattered church. And I'm living that out as a practitioner every day. So we really jumped headlong into the idea of disruption. And today we're going to continue that by looking at chapter two of the book. And for several, probably months, we're going to be walking through the book in that way. And so, Dan, when you talk about disruption, and really what's going on even now with the pandemic, and today we're going to look in particular at cultural disruption. What's the big idea there? Why does cultural disruption matter so much? How is it going to impact our lives and our Christianity?
Well, the nature of disruption is that it's so dramatic and so powerful that you just simply cannot return to the way things used to be. And so typically when we have major change, we try to realign, we try to innovate, we try to tweak it and make it a little bit better, maybe change one thing or two things. But when disruption happens, it forces a total transformation. Just thinking about COVID-19, every day in my leadership stream, more and more companies are looking to do virtual teams and allow people to work from home permanently. Right. So the disruption of COVID-19 in commercial office space is going to be significant. It's going to probably be a permanent change. Now, will it go to 100% virtual? No, but no one would have thought it would have been 30 or 40% permanently. So right. The idea for the church, the idea for Christianity is that there's so much disruption taking place globally in every area of life, the economy, technology, culture, how we live our lives daily, how we try to maintain margin with all the demands we have placed on our life. We're just going to have to make some permanent changes to get to a better place than where we are right now.
Yeah, I find it interesting, Dan, how we as people handle change. It's interesting. I read a lot of biographies, and in particular around the turn of the 1900s, the turn of the century there. It was, you know, culture had, people had ridden horses for thousands of years, and then suddenly in a span of 30, 40 years, you've got cars, electricity, light bulbs, airplanes. The world, it seemed like, was changing so fast, and you can hear the almost the apprehension in the voices of people who lived during that time and their writings and articles. They kind of want to hang on to the past. I think a great quote from Ford says that if I would have listened to people, I just would have tried to get faster horses, right? Instead of changing. We're there again, where you point out in the book major changes. You kind of give a list of social media, CNN and news and the internet and all these things over the past couple of decades that have literally changed the world as we know it. And now with COVID-19 and all these things, it's like the fast forward button has been hit. It's not slowing down. It's actually speeding up. Why is it, Dan, that we, and in particular in the church, why do we tend to white knuckle the norm, if you will, the past? And why do we tend to want to try to go back to it as soon as we can?
Well, I think two reasons, Chris, in particular in the church, we have been given the responsibility to hold fast to sacred truths that have been around for thousands of years. And so when the culture is pulling against that and the culture is saying something that doesn't align with that,
right.
we tend to believe that we've got to hold on. We've got to maintain what is sacred, and that is true. We can't surrender the essentials of our faith. And so there is that natural built-in tendency that we need to kind of, you know, build a fortress mentality to make sure that we're not, you know, shifting right. our beliefs to align with the culture rather than the culture shifting their beliefs to align with the truth.
Sure. The other understandably, thing right? That's understandable. It's dangerous, though. You point out in the book, the fortress mentality can become very dangerous for us in living out our faith.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to talk about that today. The other thing you said, though, that is really fascinating, and every leader needs to really latch onto this. Disruption almost always shows up as a crisis. And so you kind of get into a crisis management, an emergency management mode. You know, how do we just get through this? And then you enter into a stabilization mode. And the leaders, though, by their very nature, can see around the corner. They can look ahead. And every disruption, because it is change, by its very nature, creates opportunity. And so there is opportunity through disruption to get to a better place. And we as leaders have to embrace that. And even though we may have to deal with the emergency, you know, Casey had to land the plane in the Hudson. And, right. You know, so we have to get through this, and then we kind of stabilize. But now, even in COVID-19, now in the church, it's time to look toward the future. And this is an opportunity, as the church is both, you know, scattered and gathered for real, that we began to pray through what does the church of the 21st century need to look like. It certainly needs to have some aspects of both gathered and scattered, and it will be different than what we were experiencing before COVID-19.
Yeah, 100%. So, and what I love about this movement that we're kicking off and a part of is that we are very excited about the future. But in order to see where we are, we have to be honest about it. I love the example you use of the frog being in the water, and you know, if you throw a frog in a boiling pot of water, he's jumping right out. But if you turn it up really slowly, he will literally boil in the water, doesn't even realize it's happening. And you know, as a practitioner for over 20 years in the local church, man, I find that we as churches can act like the frog in the slowly heating water so often and not realize what's going on around us. Why is it imperative right now, even with the current thing we're all in, the COVID-19, why is it imperative that us as leaders, Dan, don't just kind of sleepwalk through this, but that we look ahead and go, man, what are the opportunities here? Instead of bemoaning what we are losing, what we can't do in this, there is this opportunity in front of us to literally innovate and change how we're doing things, be more effective than we've ever been. What are maybe two or three things you would say to church leaders and business leaders right now, Dan, for them to take advantage of those opportunities?
Well, I think as a Christian, Chris, the most important thing is to realize, you know, what God is doing. And we have mentioned in the book, we've talked about this before, webinars and mastermind groups, right. that God didn't really, you know, cause this pandemic, but he is using it.
Yes.
He is leveraging it. And so it's really important to see his hand in all of this, because we know, you know, his intent is to work it for our good and his glory. So once you own the fact that providentially the Father's hand is on the thermostat of the kettle where the water is and the frog is trying to live.
Right.
So once you see the source ultimately of allowing this, that should immediately cause you to pay attention. Okay, if this is just not some random, you know, laboratory mistake, if you will, on COVID-19, but providentially, God is using this to get the attention of Christians globally, right. of the church globally, of corporate leaders globally, then at that particular point in time, you have to elevate it on your priority scale because you see him behind it. It's not just some market shift that's happening to us. And so at that point, we need to, again, start asking the number one question. Whatever the new normal might look like for a while, what do I maintain and retain from the past that is critical to my core values, to my priorities, to my mission, but what do I learn from this transition period that we're in that will allow me to be better moving forward? I think the combination of what is important from the past that you don't want to lose versus what you have learned from the present disruption, how you bring those together to create a better strategy moving forward to be more effective.
Okay, that's perfect. And what it sounds like is you're finding a happy medium, if you will, between the fortress mentality, which is basically we're going to hunker down, we're going to protect our values, in many ways protect the norm. And instead, what you're saying is not give up everything that you've always held dear, not give up all your values, but indeed you step into the arena, if you will. You step out from behind the walls of the fortress and actually engage. And I think that's a good segue for us because today we're talking cultural disruption, which is certainly a major piece of this. And at Church Scattered, we like to say that culture is not our enemy. Again, that's what fortress mentality does, that's out there and we're going to keep our little world here. We don't see culture as the enemy, but we're also careful to say we don't see culture as a friend either necessarily. And we need to understand that as we actually engage the culture, which is what we believe is required for 21st century leaders, whether it's business, home, or the church. So, Dan, what do you mean when you say that culture is not our friend, also not our enemy, and how does that actually apply to how we're going to live out our faith?
Well, one of the big principles, transformational truths in Church Scattered is that context is everything. Okay. This can be applied in the corporate setting. It can be applied in the church setting or as a Christian.
Right.
And so context simply means, what is happening? Why is it
happening? What's the environment you're in, correct?
Exactly. Okay. And so really culture at the end of the day is all about context.
Okay.
And so once you understand that, a modern worldview, which used to be prevalent in the 80s and 90s, is just a cultural context. And to your point, there's a lot of logic and reason that we don't see in the postmodern worldview that we're living in now.
And you think that recently changed, Dan. So you're saying 70s, 80s, 90s had a distinctly modern cultural backdrop to it. But now the backdrop has changed. It's postmodern. Okay.
And modern would basically say logic and truth can be absolute.
All right.
That is in sharp contrast to postmodern, which believes there is no absolute truth. It's about collective reasoning. And so that shifts why people believe what they believe. But again, to your point, a modern worldview with logic and reason to support a non-Christian perspective will lead you to humanism and evolution because you have to have a system of belief to support humanism and evolution.
Right.
And that is, it's all about science. We hear this in COVID-19, trust the data. And so once you shift into a collective reasoning postmodern world, we as Christians have to just understand that's the context.
It's not that we're disagreeing with it. It's just we understand here's our backdrop.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And we talk about this a lot, Chris, and we use it in the book. And it's just an illustration that most Christians will get automatically.
Yeah.
Paul had ministry in Berea. Berea was a place where the people that were there read the scriptures daily.
Right.
And Paul had a fairly easy and effective ministry there.
That was his backdrop. He stepped into a backdrop of biblical knowledge and familiarity.
And we see him over time, transitioning to Corinth. And that was a bad party gone wild.
Totally.
He's trying to figure out all these.
He's just trying to clean up a mess in Corinth, right?
He was. And then we see him eventually end up in Athens, where he is in a totally post-modern,
hyper intellectual, hyper philosophical.
And so
are you saying he changed? Yeah, he would change the way he did ministry. Now this is this really, I love this, Dan, because as a practitioner and I think if you're a leader and you're listening to this right now, you need to be leaning forward in your seat. Because if you think for a second that the backdrop doesn't matter, that you can just continue doing ministry totally ambivalent to the environment you're in, you will fail. That's what's on the line here, Dan. is success or failure in leading through this century and this context we're in. But if you'll begin to study and learn your backdrop, like the Apostle Paul, we're not talking about a new concept here, Dan. This is what the Apostle Paul did in the New Testament. Study your context to become more effective. And you're saying the context we're in now is not the same that it was even maybe 10, 15 years ago.
No, absolutely not. And I think even Chris, Jesus was the best contextual leader ever.
Okay, okay.
Because he can pivot from the woman at the well to the woman caught in adultery to, taking a whip and cleansing the temple.
To standing before Pilate, to standing before a pagan governor and having a dialogue with him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so depending on his context, you would either see righteous indignation or you will see incredible compassion and grace and mercy.
That's so good.
The idea for him was every day he would be aligning with these people that he would meet in the circumstances he would find himself in. And Church Scattered says most of what we're talking about is not either or, but both and.
Okay.
And so in that context, how much grace and how much truth do you need in a gospel conversation?
Mm-hmm.
That is a culturally contextual skill set that we all need to develop. And again, Paul did it. Jesus did it extremely well.
Peter did it. All the guys did it.
We need to learn how to do that as well today.
I love that you call it a skill set. And I really do think that's part of what we're trying to do at Church Scattered. We want to see a generation of leaders, old and young, by the way. We don't break it down by age, but we think any of us that's been given influence, and we all have, either in our homes, our businesses, or our churches, we need to develop a skill set, and part of that is going to be becoming students of the context that we're in. You know, I live in the Southeast most of my life, Dan, but for about 4 years, I had the opportunity to do ministry and be one of the teaching pastors on a large church in South Florida. And I'll never forget how I had to quickly pivot from, the culture I had been in, preaching and teaching in. People knew if I said Noah, Peter, if I just mentioned these biblical things, they knew what I was talking about. I could start there. But I realized quickly in South Florida, Miami, Hialeah, Fort Lauderdale, those places, we were a multi-site church. When I would teach, I could throw out biblical names, biblical things. They had no clue what I was talking about. I had to start in a different place, and it took me to school, frankly, Dan, to learn that context. And what I think we're trying to tell people with Church Scattered is, in a much larger sense, we're all going to school right now, and the context is changing seemingly by the day. And if we don't become students of our backdrop, our context, we're gonna end up behind the eight ball big time on this. That's what this is all about. And so when you talk about the cultural changes, the first big one you talk about is postmodern, but it does not stop there. What's the next one that we talk about in the book that we think is a big one?
Well, very quickly, when you don't believe in absolute truth, you acknowledge all religious writings as of equal value.
And this is postmodern. This is what happens postmodern.
That's correct. You will transition very quickly, as Barna says, into a post-Christian America, which is where we are.
Yes.
Because at that particular point in time, if all religious writings are equal and collective reasoning is what determines truth, then you cannot say, I have a unique gospel. Jesus is the only way to restore a right relationship with the Father. Because at that particular point in time, if all religious writings are equal, Madonna's famous quote is, I'm Hindu, I'm Buddhist, all paths to God are equal.
Right.
And that simply is a massive threat to Christianity, because Christianity becomes one of many, which it always has been in the culture. But if you are in a post-Christian America, Europe has been post-Christian for a very long time. We have not been used to in America to live in a postmodern, post-Christian era.
Right.
And what that means for us, again, disruption, what is next is transformation.
Yeah.
So to your point earlier, we simply cannot do things the way we've always done them.
Right.
The reality of the book is that, oh, by the way, they're not working.
Yeah,
They've not been working
statistics
for a very long time.
Yeah, imperial data is telling us that. It's just not working.
They weren't working, prior to postmodernism and post-Christian America. And so we need to get back to, again, what biblically does really work. But I think, Chris, for me now, in light of what's happened recently in the news and, the tragedy of George Floyd's death
Yes.
You know, all the dynamics. This takes us into an area that, quite frankly, you and I have not even talked about. And
right.
I don't even know if we totally agree on, but I think the idea of, you know, a fortress mentality, that is the perception of three entire generations.
That's how they view the church and Christianity.
That's correct. That's exactly the lens through which they view us.
So which, whether we agree with that or not, the first thing I think people do when they hear it is they go, no, no, that's not who we are. And our point is, it does not matter if you agree or not. You need to know that's where they are.
Yes. And again, Christianity in the 20th century said, okay, here's who we are. We'll invite you to come be a part of it.
Yeah.
Christianity in the 21st century says the attractional model is not going to work. We've got to go where they live, work, and play. That's why you've got to take your
huge faith. Huge shift.
At that pivot point, you literally have to become a missionary in your context each and every day. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, and this is going to be where we get into the deep end of the pool. The big disruptive picture of Scripture is creation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, gosh, that was about as disruptive as you can get.
That's right.
Then we had the fall, terribly disruptive.
Yes.
We're suffering from it today. Then we had redemption, a glorious disruption.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're in a period of restoration as well.
Mm-hmm.
But where we as Christians get caught, and now we're back into a both and. Okay, I'm not going to be a culture warrior. I'm going to be a gospel warrior. But I'm stepping into the tension between redemption and restoration. And that's where we get into all of these issues that come up, because you know, I care more about the kingdom of God than I do America.
Okay.
And I'm a patriot. And
yeah,
so
sure.
When these things happen that are right. pushing back against the Constitution or the Bill of Rights, I
yes.
mean, there's something within me that just kind of rises up. And, you know, I don't like that.
Same here. And, yeah.
And it's kind of like, you know, Lot living in Sodom, you know, it says in the scripture that his soul was kind of tormented every day by the culture he lived in.
Yes.
Well, again, I feel the torment. I feel the,
right.
the you know, angst against what is happening in America. However, my number one loyalty is to the kingdom.
That's huge.
Not to restoring America. And so I have to keep that in alignment.
That, to some, that's inflammatory. Dan, to some listening to this, that's a big, you know, disruptive truth there for people to understand. Now, in talking about this, it's interesting because, you know, I'm in the middle of this and so much going on right now. So just in the past month, you've got COVID-19 as a backdrop. And then in the middle of that, they dropped the documentary on the 90s Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan. And it was interesting to me to watch this happen. You and I have talked about this a little bit, so many leadership lessons. But one thing that came out of it has been a comparison, fairly or not, of Michael Jordan as a player and a man and LeBron James. And I look at, like, my kids and millennials, and which half my staff here at Three Circle are millennials. And one of the arguments that have come to the top is they go, yeah, Michael Jordan was a great player, but he didn't care about anything else. He cared about the game and selling shoes. But LeBron James speaks into, you know, social issues. And there's almost an expectation now. And like even now with this horrific tragedy that happened in Minneapolis, you know, the death of this African-American man and the world looks upon it. What do you say to pastors like me and even business leaders who now we're in an environment where the world who are postmodern, they're going, we don't even believe your faith and all of that stuff. But one thing we do want to see, I think, is alignment. We want to see, do you actually live out your faith? And today the stage for that often are these social issues that pop up. So how do we walk the line between not being a culture warrior, but also not being tone deaf to it, the way many have accused like a Michael Jordan of being when he was at the height of his fame? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think you're hitting on two issues, and they're both critically important to understand. Number one, we can't surrender our calling for the culture wars. We simply cannot. I say in the book that, you know, social justice without eternal redemption is not justice at all.
Right.
And so if we feed every child that is hungry and give them clean water to drink, but don't offer them the gospel, mm-hmm. what have we really done?
Okay.
And so at some point in time, we cannot surrender our primary calling. However, the flip side of that is, eternal redemption without restoration is not redemption at all either.
Correct.
So
it's both and again. It's like church gathered and church scattered. These are not dichotomies.
It is. And so Jesus said, you know, feed the poor.
That's right.
Visit those who are in prison. Take care of these marginalized people. And so we need to do that. However, we need to do it in the context of our calling.
Right.
And so for me, what sets that context and is the foundational truth that never changes is that second big disruption, which is the fall.
That's right.
And I think for me today, just to get to a raw example, the fall simply means people spiritually cannot see biblical truth,
okay,
which relates to the role of faith in their life.
Right.
And so they're blinded to it. And so we just have to, as Christians, realize, okay, I cannot surrender the priority of redemption.
Right.
I cannot be pulled into the culture wars to the point that it is compromising the gospel message that I'm trying to share. However, to your point, Christianity 21st century says we need to prioritize living our faith,
right,
over learning about faith. And that's the whole tension between gathered and scattered.
Mm-hmm.
We have to show people by our love, by the fruit of the Spirit, that we're genuinely Christians. And when they see that at work, when they see that at the grocery store, when they see that on comments like you posted about the tragedy of the man who was killed, they realize Christians really do care.
Yeah, right.
They really do want to help. But again, we have to be spiritually mature enough to know where those percentages are. And where the church really overcompensated in the 60s and 70s over the battle for the Bible is we almost went 80, 90% truth only, and then got angry about the social gospel.
Right.
And then now we're caught because the culture said, okay, if that's where you want to stake Christianity out, we're shifting all the way over here.
Right.
We're not hearing much about the poor. We're not hearing much about sex trafficking. We're not hearing much about, you know,
anything. And the backlash can be felt. The backlash is real.
And so what we need to do now is, again, contextually not give up our number one calling, which is redemption.
Okay.
But at the same time, acknowledge that if redemption is real, it will be restorative. And at that particular point in time, we are stepping into the 21st century.
Yeah.
We are living out our Christian
faith. We're engaging. We're going to engage these issues.
Corinth and Athens,
that's
not
right.
Berea.
I love that. And just as a pastor for me, you know, when I see a tragedy, of course, our church is very multicultural and it's a beautiful thing. But I understand that there's a whole group of people when something like this happens, they wonder, what does my pastor think about this? You know, there's not enough for me to just be tone deaf to these things. I feel like I have a biblical requirement to engage at some level. But I love the fact that church scattered, hopefully, is going to give us a blueprint, a path forward that is going to help us both engage with current issues, which I think gives us credibility and is required scripturally. To your point, it's restorative and it's also the truth side. It's all of this together. And again, it sounds complex. It sounds hard. And that's to our point. This is not the old normal. This is not get in your lane and run and spend a nice 40 years in ministry or business and then die and go to heaven and it's all over. You know, it's far more complex and multifactorial now, the way we have to live out our faith. But those of us that are going to do it well, we're going to become students. And that's what the book, The Movement, is all about. And just kind of to end today's podcast, I think the last thing that I want us to hit, Dan, is the fact that we feel like when you look at the movements, the big cultural disruptions, postmodern, post-Christian, and finally, let's land the plane on post-evangelism. And the idea here is, years ago, Dan, you bring this out in the book, there was basically a system set up for churches in particular to understand how to grow in communities. And there was kind of a value system placed there to understand their effectiveness in their communities. And I think it began with the letter E. And if you will help us understand that and then help us understand what that looks like now for us, because you feel like, you make the argument, we're in a very unique place in all of history right now when it comes to how we reach the world around us.
Yeah, I think when we in the 70s and 80s, and I was going to Fuller Seminary studying missiology, again, we were in a totally different world. But what was working globally at that time, there was a clear distinction between evangelism and missions.
Yes.
And evangelism was really about reaching people that are like you.
Okay.
Missions was about reaching people that are not like you.
That's such a simple definition. Love that. There it is.
And so what happens is then when you have these cultural barriers, whether again in evangelism, it could be socioeconomic, mm-hmm. white collar, blue collar. It could be racial, black and white in Memphis, Tennessee.
Right.
But still, there was this one worldview, Judeo-Christian ethic, and you could effectively reach these people in a North American context.
Right.
And then back then, when we talked about going to the ends of the earth, it became an E3, which means you're crossing a language barrier, maybe somewhere in Africa.
And now we're talking missions. That's when you get into missions.
Three missions now.
Yep.
Full-blown international E3. Cross-cultural missions.
Okay.
And so E4 would be four barriers, and that would include religion, like, Islamic world.
Right.
Or Hinduism in India, et cetera. And so what the book is basically saying is the cultural distance of three entire generations in America is as significant today, because we're postmodern and post-Christian, as missions was in the 70s and 80s.
It's amazing.
And we're going to have to treat reaching people in North America just like we used to treat reaching people in Africa and India. And that means, again, leadership development becomes about learning how to be a missionary.
Right.
Learning how to understand someone's culture that's different from yours. And, oh, by the way, how are you going to effectively move them closer to Christ? And so once you see that, then you begin to, again, take it to a deeper level of training. And it talks about receptivity.
Right.
How open is this person in this E3, E4 context? Let's say they're a millennial nun that I work with.
And when you say nun, N-O-N-E, you're talking about this whole group that says, I don't believe in anything. I believe I've got my own version of truth. Right. That's the starting point.
That's correct. And so if that's their cultural starting point, then again, I have to go a little bit deeper and say, okay, where are they on receptivity to new ideas, new truth, or whatever? And if I, through, a conversation or listening to them and, in a meeting, before the meeting gets started, and, I hear some hostility, I hear some negativity, again, then I've got to align with where they are. And when I align with where they are, that simply means I'm going to shift the ratio of grace and truth in the gospel interactions that I have to align with where they are from a receptivity standpoint, recognizing already that they're in E3, E4, that it is cross-cultural missiology that's going to help me to reach them over a long period of time.
That's huge.
And what has to happen there is, again, we talk about in Church Scattered a new scorecard. And Tom Rainer brought this up in Transformational Church. And,
yeah, great work that he did there.
It's not just about budgets and buildings and bodies. It's about, changed lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the new scorecards in Church Scattered is, how many intentional conversations are you having with lost people?
Right.
And these are people that you know. I mean, you work with them.
Yeah.
They're your neighbor. And so this is not a one and done evangelism explosion, knock on the door, unload the clip, and I'll never see you again. This is like, I want to do life with you. I want to build trust. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is,
to your point, it's missions.
It's
missions now at the baseball field. It's missions at my job. That's the point we're making here.
It is. And missions takes 20 times longer than evangelism.
Much more work.
And you have to be patient. You have to pray. You have to be willing to be present, because what happens in all of our lives is, and this is a concept that's not far from disruption, but it's really just change. And people have things that happen in their life. At work, I cannot tell you how many times someone has said to me that I'm cultivating a relationship with that's lost, that my wife was just diagnosed with cancer.
That's right.
Well, that's a change point. that is an opportunity to build trust, to say to them, boy, Bill, I'm really sorry to hear that. Would it be okay with you if I pray for Mary as she goes through this whole
That's right.
treatment process?
And you're able to step in at that point.
You're able to
But
step
you don't
in.
Get to do that without presence. And I love the term engagement. You know, I think in our communities, you know, COVID-19, for every church listening, to Dan's point, just take that in that's a very micro example, but a macro level, what you're doing right now is you are creating presence. This is an opportunity for your church to create presence and not just say, hey, come see what we do. But you can't do that right now anyway. But these 2 months of not being able to tell everyone, come and see, you can't do that anyway, has been an opportunity for many churches to create a new presence in their communities where, to your point, people begin to go, you know, those guys were there for me. They were there for our community. I may want to engage. I may listen to what they have to say now. The opportunities are huge when, to your point, we create presence, we stay engaged with the culture around us. We don't see the culture as an enemy that we built a fortress against. We also understand the great dangers that are there in the culture, that we can't acclimate, we can't be assimilated, but at the same time, we are going to engage, right, Dan?
Yeah, and what I have to really deal with at the personal level as a Christian in the 21st century, I have to love lost people who vilely disagree with me more than I love what I believe about, again, cultural issues.
Yeah.
Now, I cannot love that person more than the gospel. I cannot change the gospel to accommodate them that it will sound a little bit better to them.
Right.
I cannot compromise those core biblical truths. However, I have to separate the difference between my cultural values
yeah.
and being an American patriot, and I have to value that person and their relationship with eternity over trying to make an American patriot out of them.
So I'm going
to sacrifice my cultural expectations for my eternal values, which is going to cause me to focus in on that person more than all the other things that are going on.
Yeah, so good, Dan. This has been a great discussion that I hope people will tune in and listen to. Again, the point we're trying to make today is that evangelism today for business leaders, church leaders, and in your own home with your communities, the baseball field and schools, it looks more like missions now than it ever has. It's a different environment. We're telling you, we got to stop building fortresses. We have to start engaging the culture around us and do that wisely, become students of the environment that we are in. And then finally, I would just say, guys, listen, we have to begin to meet people where they are. Instead of trying to demand that they believe what we believe, they don't. They're in a different spot. And we got to be willing to engage them where they are. That does not mean you're assimilating. It doesn't mean you're watering down. It doesn't mean you're acquiescing to anything. It just means that you love them, to your point. You love them more than your opportunity to prove that you're right about everything, that we're willing to engage. That is one of the many disruptive truths in this book and in this movement that we are part of called Church Scatter. We hope you enjoyed the podcast today. Another one is going to be coming. These are going to be coming every couple of weeks. The book has dropped. You can pick up our book by going to our website. It's really the main place we'd love for you to go, churchscattered.com. You'll find out a lot more about us, about what we're all about, the network, the webinars. We're on Facebook Live. You can see us across all social media platforms. And again, we are here to help you engage in your homes, your businesses, and your churches and live out our faith in the 21st century. It's going to require a lot, but the opportunities are greater than we could ever imagine. Dan, once again, great conversation. Thank you so much. Check out the next podcast. It'll be coming soon. And again, check us out at churchscattered.com. Until next time, let's continue to live out our faith in this world and in this environment that we're in our churches, our homes, and in our businesses. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you, Chris.